Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome Ron Moore back to the podcast. Welcome back, Ron.
Thank you.
So, Ron, you are an author, a consultant, a speaker in maintenance and reliability, operational excellence programs. You know, you've authored many books, What Tool When, and quite a few others. How long have you been involved in maintenance and reliability?
I suppose at this point, about 30 years. I was president of a company called CSI. They were a predictive maintenance company during its formative years, and I joined that company in 1988. So I suppose you could use that as the start point or the marker.
Excellent. And during that time, you've written many books, What Tool When, Making Common Sense Common Practice, one of my favorites. So you have written that book, What Tool When. What does that book actually cover, and why did you choose to write that book?
Well, I chose to write it because my publisher asked me to. And the truth is, I wasn't enthusiastic about it. But after some discussion with him, we both concluded that that might be a useful book for people to have so that they don't jump in the deep end, as they say. And maybe they start out with a tool that's appropriate to their current capability, situation, and so on. The book covers, I think, the most common tools in use. Lean manufacturing, although just a point of clarification, I think of lean manufacturing as more of a philosophy than a tool. And it encompasses, you know, lots and lots of tools. For example, Kaizen. And Kaizen itself is a bucket of tools. It's 5S, standard work, go and see, 5Ys, and so on. Visual workplace. It also covers TPM, Six Sigma, root cause analysis, reliability-centered maintenance, supply chain performance. But I think an important point in the book is that before we get to Lean, Six Sigma, TPM, and so on, the first several chapters are dedicated to things like leadership, alignment, teamwork, and managing cultural change. I think if you get that right, just about any tool will work for you. If you don't get that right, I don't think any tool will work for you.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with that. If you don't have that leadership, you can't manage that change, you don't have the culture in place, it doesn't matter which tool you have, you will not be successful no matter how much you throw at it.
Right. So that's what the book covers. And I think those first few chapters are, I think, it's the soft stuff, but it's also the very hard stuff.
Absolutely. Now, with all those wide range of improvement tools you talked about, the lean thought process or methodology, 5S, RCM, operator asset care, where does one begin to choose the right tool for themselves?
Well, again, I think it begins with the leadership, the alignment, and so on. But let's put that aside for just a minute. If I were in charge, you know, my focus would be on doing the basics really well. And the basic tools, in my mind at least, it's so-called Kaizen. You can call it whatever you want. But Kaizen consists of things like 5S, standard work, go and see, go talk to the workers, 5Ys, quick changeover, having a visual workplace so it's easy to see problems and defects, and then having structured improvement time. The reason I like those is because they assure that you get the basics right. You solve a lot of problems by doing those things. And I think the most important thing about those tools is that they involve all of the workforce. And if, you know, if done properly, one criticism I have of most folks doing 5S is that they typically do 4S. They sort, straighten, scrub, and stop. And then 6 months later, you can't tell that anything's been done. In fact, you've discredited 5S. So they leave out the part about systematize and standardize so that you sustain. And like I said, those are, you know, those involve all the workforce and they eliminate a lot of defects and problems. And I think of those as the organizational enablers. They create the organizational readiness, the culture, if you will, for improvement.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with that. You know, in my experience, you know, I see them do the 4S and they don't progress to that 5, which is the sustain piece. They don't have that organizational discipline or culture to make 5S work. So how can they get the rest of these more involved programs to work? But you did touch on a great point there with making sure everyone is involved, not just being a maintenance thing or an operations thing.
Yeah. Well, typically, if you there's several studies out there, and Bob Kelleher is I consider him a friend at this point, and he does a lot of work around employee engagement. And what he tells me, and he's got the data to back it up, only about 30% of the workforce is typically engaged. That is, they're working hard to make things better. 50% are disengaged. Now they're showing up doing what they have to get a paycheck. And 20% are actually actively disengaged. You know, they're doing things that are actually contrary to the interests of the company. So it's really important to engage all the workforce in helping you get better and get them involved and have a sense of purpose and ownership.
Absolutely. So when organizations feel they're ready to move on to one of these improvement tools, what considerations do they need to take into account when selecting it? I know we talked about culture, leadership. Are those the only things or is there more?
Pretty doggone good organization. And you've got a disciplined workforce and high level of engagement and a high degree of standard work and all that sort of thing, structured improvement time. Then I think the next thing you're ready for is the so-called TPM. It's total productive maintenance, but it's actually total productive manufacturing. And so that's where you're using OEE to manage your losses. You've got a high degree of operator care and consistency in operating the processes. You're fairly effective in your PM and PDM and your planning and scheduling. When you restore equipment, when you repair equipment, you restore it to like new. You don't just patch it. And there's a high degree of training and continuous development of your workforce. And finally, you have a good concept of maintenance prevention built into the design so that when you design new equipment, it's easy to operate and easy to maintain. And you know, that would be the next phase that I would encourage people to get into. Now, if you're really good at that, you've eliminated another set of problems. Now I think you're ready for things like Six Sigma, RCA, and RCM, and perhaps supply chain management.
Excellent. So we start out with those base pieces, if you will, you know, the 5S, the TPM. Then from there, we grow into the Lean Six Sigma, you know, the RCA, the RCM, those type of activities. Now, if an organization, say, has some level of TPM in place, how can they eliminate tools that may not be right for them? You know, for example, jumping from having Lean or TPM implemented to a point and not jumping right to Six Sigma. How do they eliminate those ones so they don't take those overarching steps, if you will?
That's a very difficult question, particularly if you've got somebody within the organization that's determined to do it. But I wouldn't recommend it. And again, you know, Lean in my mind is more of a operating philosophy than it is a set of tools. It encompasses all the tools if properly done. What I've found is that when people jump into things like Six Sigma, RCA, and RCM, well, first off, it only involves 3-5% of the workforce. So you got the other 95%, you know, kind of over yonder. doing whatever it is they've always done. And of course, with that kind of leverage, they have the ability to scuttle anything you might do using those tools, which makes them far less likely to be sustainable. And now, don't get me wrong, I think those tools are superb tools, you know, properly applied. But I think they have their place. For example, you might start out with five whys, which is part of the Kaizen group. Well, suppose that problem gets fairly complex fairly quickly. Then you can drop down and use a more, you know, a more sophisticated root cause analysis approach. But five whys, you can engage anybody with that. They don't need any particular training or development. Another example, suppose you start out with standard work, which is another one of those Kaizen tools, but you still get a lot of variation in your processes. You still get a lot of variation in your outcomes. Then drop down and do Six Sigma, you know, because then you've got sufficient information, ability, and so on to know that Six Sigma will be very productive for you. And using the simple tools, I think you can solve 70-80% of the problems that you have and make those more advanced tools, you know, much more productive and much more sustainable. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but that's just my stream of consciousness response.
No, it makes perfect sense. You know, you start with those basics, you get them working, you eliminate, you know, 70-80% of those problems. And then once you have that maturity level, then you step to the next level or next evolution in it, going from five whys to maybe fault tree analysis or something of that nature, to go after that next set of problems. But you have to start small. You have to start with the basics. You can't just jump knee deep into the most advanced concepts there are.
Right.
Now, many of these tools, TPM, Lean, RCM, Kaizen, they require maintenance and operations to work together, which is what we want in an ideal world. But if we don't have support from operations, for example, what tools are available to the maintenance group to start implementing, start using to generate support from operations? Or are there not any?
Well, I think you're far less likely to be successful if you don't have operations support. But that said, you know, a lot of people have used things like, you know, predictive maintenance or condition monitoring, work management planning and scheduling, improve their PM practices and so on to do what they can do that's within their authority, ability, and control. That typically results in about a, you know, maybe a 10% improvement in your OEE and maybe 2-3% improvement in your maintenance costs. But you've still got a mile to go, you know, or 1,000 miles. So until you get that production-led approach or operations-led approach, you're going to be hamstrung in your ability to effectively apply those tools. So, you know, those tools can work independent of operations, but you'll not be nearly as successful if you don't have operations support partnership, if you will.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Even if you're doing, you know, PM optimization, for example, we want to make sure that we have operations in there to make sure we're not missing things that they deal with on a regular basis and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Now, when organizations are looking to implement these types of improvement activities, should they be focused on process or operational improvements or maintenance and reliability improvements first?
Well, I'm firmly convinced that it should be operational improvements. And by the way, I don't use maintenance and reliability in the same phrase. I think of reliability as a comprehensive combination of design, procurement, operations, and maintenance. And when we use maintenance and reliability in the same phrase, we sort of imply if we do good maintenance, we'll get good reliability. And that's just not true. The defects coming from design, procurement, and particularly operations will overwhelm the ability of a maintenance organization to, you know, do good work and sustain the results of that work. So I'm convinced that you start with production and you develop a production and maintenance partnership that's production led. And then you work together to apply those tools as appropriate to your circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, we're going to get a lot more bang for our buck if we have operations involved, if we're looking at operational improvements. That will lead us to reliability, like you said. Maintenance reliability, as you mentioned, does not go in the same sentence with you, or same, they're not the same term, if you will. So we need that operational improvements to get reliability, as well as those maintenance improvements, if you will.
Well, and the other thing I've found in most, just about every company I've come across, and you know, and I'm talking about a manufacturing or heavy industry. I'm not talking about a hospital or a railroad operation or anything like that, but in a production type operation, what I've found is that the production guys, the operations folks, control about 90% of the operating losses. And maintenance controls about 10% of the operating losses. So if you want the most bang for your buck, then get with the operating guys. And so that the breakdown of that, it's about 2/3 of the production losses don't have anything to do with the equipment. It's related to typically raw materials, supply and quality, or the product changeovers, or short stops, or production planning, you know, those kinds of things. Of the other third that is equipment related, you've got an equipment failure or an equipment slowdown. Typically 2/3 of that is because of poor operating practices, not because the operators are bad folks, but because they haven't been properly trained or it's difficult to operate or something along those lines. So that just, that leaves maintenance in control of only about 10% of your production losses. And my measure of reliability is the ability to produce product, quality product in a timely way. And that's a indication of a measure that's measured by OEE.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I think back to when I was working at a particular site. In that particular site, they had so many maintenance related losses that that's where they decided to focus first. Everything was constantly breaking down, and it wasn't because of process related issues. It's because the equipment has been neglected for, you know, many years before that. So we had to tackle some of that first. But we only got about 5 or 10% improvement in OEE with that. We could not move it any further along until we started dealing with those process losses. You know, whether it was poor incoming raw material quality, whether it was operators not knowing how to run the equipment, and so on and so forth, right? Once we started dealing with that, then we saw the major leap forward.
Yeah, I that's been a, you know, predominant situation in the plants I've been in. And in fact, I think it applies to, you know, something on the order of 90, maybe 95% of the operations I've seen. It doesn't apply to every single one I've been to, but it's really, you know, really dominant in the industrial workplace.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com. Now, what tools should organizations avoid when they're just starting out and are fairly immature in their processes? What ones are the absolute do not go near these tools?
I don't know that you wouldn't go near them. I'm speaking a bit of heresy here, but particularly if they're in a poor state, I would not start with RCM, RCA, or Six Sigma. I just wouldn't. I would go, like I said earlier, I would go back to the basics, you know, the 5S, 5Y standard work, go and see kind of thing. It's not that they're bad tools, they're wonderful tools, but it just takes so long and involves so much resource in getting results, and it only involves a small fraction of the workforce. If you want the leverage, what you want to do is engage 80 or 90% of the workforce in doing the simple things right, not 3 or 4 or 5% of the workforce doing more advanced analyses. So I would avoid those. If you're well along the path and you've got all those things in place, then maybe that's the right tool for you. But if you're not, I don't think it is.
Excellent. Now, what do organizations need to be successful once they selected that right tool? I know we mentioned leadership and culture in the beginning. Is that what they need, or they need more than just that?
I think if you have those things, you know, that pretty much puts you in a position to have a high probability of success. The one thing that I would encourage folks out there to think about is, once I've got this done, how will I sustain it? Will it require new standards, procedures? Will it require new training? Will it have to become a part of our ISO 9002 certification? Is it a part of my ISO 55000 certification? You know, you've got to have some sort of process to lock down the improvements. And that comes about when you have standards and procedures and development and, you know, and all those things that go with, you know, creating within the organization a structure, if you will, that sustains it. So think a little bit ahead about how you're going to sustain it once you've got it done. You know, there's an old wag, I think, or story, and I've used it a lot of times, is that entropy always wins. And for the folks out there who are engineers, they know what entropy is, but if you're not, it's just the tendency for a system to dissociate. So you've got to have energy or structure to retain the system in the improved state. Otherwise, it will naturally dissociate.
Yes, absolutely. Those are, you know, you need to do those things like embedding it into your daily work, setting up the processes or the metrics to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and it's going to get there. One thing I commonly see organizations do is they'll implement these lean activities, these other tools, but they won't document the procedure or the policy around them. And the moment one person leaves, they don't have a policy or standard to follow for it anymore. So it all kind of fades away, like you said.
Yeah, it dissociates because there's no energy to sustain it and keep it in place.
Exactly. Now, are there any other thoughts on selecting the right improvement tools that we haven't covered yet?
Well, I mean, there are lots of thoughts, but and I don't mean this as a plug for the book, but, you know, if folks want to have a lot more detail than what we've managed to give them here in whatever, half an hour, 45 minutes, you know, go get the book. I don't get a bucket load of money for the book, so I don't care. But if you want chapter and verse, you know, get the book, What Tool When. It's a management guide for selecting the right tools.
Excellent. And we will make sure to put a link to that in the show notes. So if people do want to pick it up, we'll make it easy for them to find. Now, what is the one thing that makes the biggest difference in being successful with any of these improvement initiatives?
Well, I think there are really two or three things, and they all go together. Of course, one of them is the leadership, as we've said. But I'd like the word sponsorship. And what I mean by that is that the leadership is an active sponsor for reliability and operational excellence. And they give the same degree of attention as they would for safety, because the two are highly correlated. You know, a reliable plant is a safe plant. And if they really believe in safety, they're going to be active sponsors. They're not going to just assign it to somebody and walk away. They're going to be asking frequently. They're going to reward and punish for things that go well and things that don't. They're going to talk about it. They're going to ask about it. They're going to measure it. They're going to be actively engaged, much the same as it would be for safety. So that's the first thing. The second thing, though, is to have a good production and maintenance partnership. You know, there's a guy out there, Edgar Schein, he wrote a book called Organizational Psychology, where he talked about task interdependence. And he makes the point with a lot of data and research that the greater the task interdependence is, the greater the need there is for collaboration, teamwork, or if you will, a partnership. And if you don't have that, then the task interdependence winds up being an obstacle rather than an enhancement to your objectives. And so to facilitate that partnership, I think there need to be shared measures amongst groups that have high task interdependence. So, for example, I would make production responsible for maintenance schedule compliance and maintenance and repair costs. And, of course, maintenance would still be responsible for that, but I want the production guy to feel a sense of ownership for that. And I would make the maintenance guy responsible for on-time delivery of the product. So when they want to do maintenance, that's going to impact, you know, for example, their annual bonus. And there are other measures where you can, that you can use to facilitate addressing this issue of task interdependence and get folks to work more closely together.
Yeah, I've actually in a past life experienced that where they actually put production in charge of PM compliance and maintenance schedule compliance. At first, I thought it was crazy, but then I began to see the intelligence behind it. You know, if they're being measured on making sure that they hand over the equipment when they say they're going to hand over the equipment, so maintenance can do their maintenance, they have much more skin in the game, and it drives much higher levels of compliance, shared ownership of the equipment, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So, and I mean, there are other examples, you know, like, for example, maintenance and stores. I'd make them both responsible for inventory levels and for stockout rate. You know, those are kind of contraindicated measures. You know, the stores guy usually reports to purchasing now. He wants to reduce the amount of holding that he has because that's working capital just sitting there. On the other hand, the maintenance guy wants all of everything. And so he doesn't have a stockout. So if you make them both responsible for those two measures, they'll figure out a way to get the balance right.
Yes, they will. They absolutely will. And I think it's that type of joint ownership, that type of teamwork is what, as you alluded to previously, allows organizations to drive these improvements and really get those results. They're not going to get that 10%. They're going to get up there and start getting all those losses or inefficiencies out of the system.
Yeah.
Now, if you had a magic wand based on all your experience, what would be the one thing you would typically improve upon or change in one of these improvement initiatives?
I don't know that there's a one thing. The thing that pops into my mind right now, particularly regards to reliability, would be the reliability initiative would be production led, and they would be held accountable for improving the reliability of the process, the equipment, and so on. That's right up there at the top of the list. Of course, what goes with that is, again, it's doing the basics right, you know, the 5S, 5Y standard work kind of stuff. And, of course, leadership or executive sponsorship, where they're actively engaged in all this. And if you have those things going, and you make it production led, you're going to be far more likely to be successful.
Yes, absolutely. Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today?
Well, I hope what they can take away from this is get the basics right first, engage all your workforce, and you know, maybe it's a second thing, focus on a good production and maintenance partnership. Because you're far more likely to be successful when you have those elements in play.
Yeah, I have to agree. Start with the basics. Start on that partnership. Work on those first. Don't just jump into the deep end and expect success. Now, where can people find out more about you? Are you speaking at any events?
I'll be the Reliability Conference sponsored by Terry O'Hanlon, ReliabilityWeb.com, I think it is. I'll be speaking there and doing a workshop there in Seattle on May 5th, I think it is. And I've got a trip to Australia and New Zealand coming up. If anybody's interested in going there, I'll be in Wellington, New Zealand, and then all over Australia, end of March, first part of April. And I've got some other stuff going on with material handling, reliability web, some OpEx workshops coming up soon. I don't have a website. I don't do Facebook. I don't do LinkedIn. I find all those things to be an aggravation for me. I think they're great for, you know, everybody else, but I just don't have those.
Yep, absolutely. No problem. Well, I will make sure to link to those events that you are attending so people can, if they want to attend, join you for those. Now, you know, I always ask our guests what their favorite resources are. Obviously, what tool when by yourself, making common sense, common practice by yourself. And you also mentioned organizational psychology. So I will make sure to put links to all those in the show notes. But is there anything else other than those that comes to mind when we talk about improvement initiatives?
Well, I just was adept at all this social networking stuff. And he put a YouTube interview up on the, it's out there on YouTube. It's the Ron Moore Buddy Lee YouTube interview. And it's about, it's 3 10-minute interview. It's a total of 30 minutes, 3 10-minute interviews where Buddy Lee asked me a series of questions and I respond to that. So if folks are interested in, you know, that, it's out there.
Excellent. I'll make sure to link to that as well as watch it tonight. Well, Ron, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about what tool when, how organizations can, you know, select the right improvement tool and make it successful. I certainly learned some more about this, so thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. I hope folks can take it and run with it and be successful with it.
I believe they will. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.